Hey, welcome to the show. You are listening to the Rusik Podcast. We are a roots music podcast based out of Nashville, Tennessee, where we talk to the local music scene and beyond.
Our guest today is Sarah Johnson. She is a singer-songwriter originally from Dallas, Texas, now living here in Nashville.
If you want to see Sarah perform, you can head on over to our YouTube channel where we have performances from all of our guests. Subscribe over there. It helps us out a ton. Check it out. Yeah. Are you someone this is something that I always, I think is so specific to every performer. Mm-hmm. What was your relationship like with helming a stage and having that playback with an audience?
Yeah.
Is that something that take time? Was it really natural?
I grew up, and the whole reason why I got into music was actually to be in my church worship band.
Oh, very nice.
And so the whole idea of me being on stage for so long was to get the crowd involved, yeah, or to engage them, or to be a conduit of them experiencing the music. And so I would say getting on stage and, bantering with the crowd or whatever, yeah, it's been this kind of lifelong thing. Now, leading worship and then singing in a honky tonk is very different. However, I do think that, before songs, I'll maybe pose it in a way where someone might be able to relate to it. Has anyone ever met their significant other in a bar or met someone in a bar, or something like that? And then for everyone that has, which is most people, whether it's someone that lasted a night or a, lifetime, that they're automatically thinking of their person or that instance. And then I go into the song talking about meeting someone in a bar, and then they're probably putting their life into it.
So for you, when you're thinking about that, is it sort of a shorthand to get into, to emotionally make them available for the song?
It would be giving them a little preface so that maybe they could identify with the song.
Interesting.
Or at least a little insight into why I wrote it. Because I do feel like when you even have an idea of what the song is about, or even get to know me as a person, you might lean in a little bit more to hear what I'm saying. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's also always a trip to understand why people write songs, because the mechanics of doing it are always fascinating. The mechanics of understanding how does person A write a song in comparison to person B. Mm-hmm. That's always going to be interesting because it's such an elusive thing. And because it's very difficult to nail these things down when you're dealing with whatever that creative thing is. Mm-hmm. Even just the way people deal with an audience, I think is so hyper specific to who you are as an artist.
Oh, absolutely.
And some people have completely different goals when they're up there. Someone like yourself might want to use that as a way of an emotional anchor to connect the audience to the song. And other people just want to do it for a flippin' joke or whatever. And so it runs the whole spectrum's there.
Yeah.
So I always find that very rewarding to pick someone's brain.
Yeah. But I think at the end of the day, I don't know. I think music and being a musician, I do have a mentality of how am I going to serve my audience? I mean, they're mm-hmm. kind enough to give me their time, their money, their attention, their tips, whatever. And so I kind of see this position as how am I going to make their life better? How am I going to serve them? Is it going to? And so to me, that kind of drives some of the engagement too of okay, if you are in the middle of the worst heartbreak of your life, am I going to make you feel a little bit better because someone is putting words to that right now? Or if you want to forget it, is this going to be a happy song? Or, I don't know. I think it's not about, and I'm actually really glad I'm talking about this, because I think sometimes getting to Nashville, it can be about, they're here to watch me, or mm-hmm. I'm going to try to impress them, or, I'm in Nashville and who knows who's out here, pub dealership guy. Yeah. You just kind of if you make it about yourself.
It can get self-indulging.
Yeah,
creepy,
very ego-driven. Very and it's man, I'm talking about this right now, I'm like, okay, Sarah, I'm glad I'm saying these words out loud, because this is what I truly believe in my heart and soul, is that it is a position of serving the audience and giving mm-hmm. them a wonderful experience, and not about you. And I think that makes a really genuine performance. And someone
even that is so interesting, because even that differs from creative person to creative person. Some people just how, I guess a way of saying that would be how much the audience factors into the equation. Cause there are some performers where maybe closer to the end of the spectrum, like yourself, the audience is weighing very heavy on that scale. Mm-hmm. And then there are other people where the audience is completely irrelevant. And so it's from just a very, very fundamental level. I just think it's really interesting to see how people deal with that.
Yeah.
Because some people are more like yourself, more interested in how do I, it's more of a service that you're providing.
Yeah.
Almost.
Yeah.
It's almost like it is really a service sort of approach that you're taking to that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So you've been in Nashville like 6 months now?
It's been
like
6 months.
Yeah.
Moved in July.
Oh, there you go.
24.
Yeah. Oh yeah. The anniversary's right there then.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Where'd you move here from?
I moved here from Dallas, Texas.
Are you from there originally?
I'm from there. Yes.
Okay, okay.
Born and raised.
Oh, so that was a big,
I've never left home. No.
So that was that a big move or had you kind of drifted away from Texas for a while and gone back?
No, I've been Texas based my entire life.
Oh, wow,
so
okay.
I grew up in Dallas and then went to the University of Texas. I cannot say UT here. So I went to the University of Texas in Austin for 4 years, and you know, that I don't know if that counts as living in Austin, honestly.
Yeah, close enough. Yeah.
Yeah. And then came back to Dallas and didn't think I was actually going to stay for more than a summer. I had an internship and then ended up being my adult life until July. So
that's crazy.
Yeah.
That's pretty wild. What was the reason for coming out here? Was it solely music or were there other components?
Solely music driven. Mm-hmm. However, I think the more and more that I spend time here and also realize the benefits of getting out of your hometown and bubble,
totally,
if you will, I think I've realized how much it was meant to be for self-growth and discovery and a lot of things that I don't know if I realized how much was going to happen.
I think just there is a huge benefit for just living in different places, like getting to experience what living in a certain place is like. If you get stuck in one place too long, like I feel like your perspective gets way too narrow.
Yeah. And like there's so many little things, just whether it's the way people, just the sort of the culture of the place, the way people act, or even, I mean, I love Tennessee. I think just Nashville's great, mm-hmm. but Tennessee is stunning. I love it as a state. So there are so many different factors, and that's good. But that's nonetheless, it still has to be a scary leap to take.
Oh, it's terrifying. I still have days where I wake up and I'm like, is this actually my home? Like, did I move? Did I do that? Like, this is not a vacation. This is not like a semester abroad. Like, yeah. I moved my entire life to Tennessee. But so, yeah, it is terrifying. No, you're good.
She's giving us hand signals. She's like, move the mic.
Yeah. No, it's terrifying, but I think it's been terrifying in a really good way. And I guess you can deal with terror in many different ways. And am I going to use this for growth and the pursuit of something that I love and see what happens and kind of be, I don't know, have fun with it? Or am I going to sit paralyzed in my bed and realize and, you know, freak out that I am actually doing this? And I have chosen the former.
Good. That's probably the healthy approach.
Yeah.
So how long has music been the sort of the dominant force in your life?
Forever.
Yeah.
I mean, I wrote my first song when I was 2 years old. That's
wow.
You know,
okay. You got a few years on me then.
Yeah. So, wow. And so my mom wrote songs all the time just for everything that we were doing in daily life. So she had a little song for setting the table, for crossing the street, for good manners, whatever
it
was.
Really,
and so I think between that and then my dad has just great taste in music, I was like, oh, this is what you do. You write songs about everything that you're doing all the time. And so it's just been from day one that's been kind of ingrained in me. And I have this whole binder in my childhood home of, like, you know, as soon as I could write, it's like all the little scribbles of things that, you know, little songs that I wrote and things that I was thinking. And a lot of it was about God and what I was learning through that. And so, yeah, it's just been forever.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's unique. Most people, at least that we talk to, and I think most people that I know, the songwriting usually comes a little later. at least for myself, and I think, again, there are a lot of people in this camp, you sort of discover music and you, for whatever reason, right or wrong, you sort of fall in love with it. And then you think, oh, can I do that? Like, can I be the creative force to do that?
Yeah.
So to have that come first, did that shape your view of who you are as a musician and kind of your relationship to music at that point? If it sounds to me, at least, like the songs kind of came first, and the construction came first.
And so I think as far as like musicianship, and even just when the world gets kind of cloudy as far as the promotion, and we were talking about even taking the pictures and like all the crazy stuff that music now entails, I think that it's very grounding for me to realize and always come back to, I'm a songwriter first. I think that's what truly makes, if we're talking about the long game in the music industry, it's always going to come back to the song and what connects with people and just good music and good lyrics. And so whenever I kind of feel like I'm getting lost, it's always like, no, if I always remember that I'm kind of first and foremost a songwriter, then I won't, that's kind of the compass.
Yeah. And some people, I mean, that's another thing that's so varied. Some people, the songwriting comes first and they think of themselves, I am a songwriter, and then everything else kind of follows. And other people, which I might even put myself more in this camp, it's like, I like performing, but I don't feel like performing other people's stuff, if that makes sense. It's like, I got stuff I want, but like the songwriting almost comes like, not secondary, maybe secondary. It's sort of, there's so many different approaches to this kind of stuff. I love hearing about everyone's, because there's not a right or wrong way to do this.
Yeah, because there's so many ways that people like are not only satisfied first and foremost, but successful. There's no right or wrong or one way to do it for sure.
The Going to Nashville song, that came out last year, right?
Yes, it did.
So I assume that was written at least somewhere in the process of this giant life decision.
Yes. So actually that song has had a couple different lives. Okay. I moved to Nashville for the first time for one summer in the summer of 2019. And this was before I had only a background in church worship leading, essentially. And so I started writing Americana country songs and got really good response from that, and did house concerts where I was like, oh, you can sing your secular music at these house concerts. We want people to be able to hear them. You should do this. And I was terrified because I never really sung my own personal songs, essentially like my diary, for anyone before. It just was always, worship leading or not even about me. And so I started doing these house concerts, and then got such great response that I was like, well, what if I recorded these and saw what happened? I'd never done a gig before. I'd never really, besides the house concert. And for some reason, I was like, well, if I'm going to learn about the music industry, I got to go to Nashville. And so I moved to Nashville for a summer, lived with a family. And it was on that first drive from Dallas to Nashville that I wrote that song. But the first version of that song was actually very sad. It was about leaving your broken heart, and you're going to Nashville, and you're going to start over a new life without the person that you loved. I can't remember if I just was leaving a crush at the time. I'm sure I'd have to write from like personal experience. I'm sure I was like thinking of some crush that I was like, I'm leaving Dallas and you'll never see me again, and you had your chance. And so it was like a kind of heartbroken song. And then fast forward 4 years, I was then actually moving to Nashville, but I had such a different mentality. And I was like, oh man, like I'm not moving to Nashville to like forget a boy. I'm moving to Nashville because I am so excited about a new life. And I changed the lyrics and I rewrote the song.
See, and that's wonderful. Sometimes things I really do take time to blossom and kind of mature into what they need to be. Because who knows, maybe if you would have done it the initial way, it would have just kind of been a throwaway, like other things that you had done or other people had done. And
well, we did this full studio recording of the old version too. And then I think I was just listening to it again, and I was like, man, this isn't how I feel about moving to Nashville. And I called my producer and I was like, can we please re-record the vocals? And so he squeezed me in to re-record it.
That's great.
And so
that's the one that came out last year, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So you wrote that. That's a co-write, right? Did you do that with someone else? Or
so the rewrite was ended up being a co-write where I was, I got Caroline Hale. She lives in Austin, but she was living in Nashville at the time. She lived over this here over the summer of 24. So she had a little bit of the going to Nashville. She gotcha. Got it.
Understood. Yeah, she
got it. And so she helped me because I just was trying to piece together some of the ideas that I had.
Do you co-write often, or is that a rarity for you?
It's a rarity only because, like, and maybe this is just the Texas spirit. I don't know. People are very independent. Like, that just, I never knew what co-writing was.
I cannot co-write for the life of me. I've tried it, and I'm like, every single, I remember, okay, this is such an aside, but I'm going to go down this rabbit hole anyway.
Let's do it.
I was on this was a handful of years ago now. I was on this management team, I had this management team, and they were always trying to get me to co-write. And one day I went and co-wrote with this guy who had done a lot of stuff around town and was like a big songwriter. Super, super nice guy. Like, really just sweetheart of a guy. But, you know, the whole time I'm trying, and you know my songs, right? And they're like fucking, they're crazy songs. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going up there and be like, you know, I'm in love with a girl. You know, my songs are like not that, you know? And I remember I was trying to write with this guy, and it was like, again, a much better songwriter than myself in the sense of, like, he feeds himself doing this. And here I am, but like doing the thing that I do because I'm like, no, fuck it. This is what I do.
Yeah.
And it was like, there was this disconnect. It was so fascinating. Like you can't. And he loved my stuff. It was really fascinating because he was like, he got to a point where he's like, I can't do this with you. Just go do this.
Yeah. Like, you do you, I'll do me. We can't really do it together.
But it was this really weird moment of like realization of like, oh shit, like here's this person who's incredibly competent at what they do, obviously. And it was really, I just loved picking his brain for a handful of hours and just, you know, showing him stuff and kind of, you know, again, just getting an idea for how he does things.
Yeah.
But it was this weird realization very quickly on both of our parts of like, oh shit, this isn't what the other person does.
Yeah.
And it was the only time in my life where that sort of, that, you know, truck hit that wall and it was like, oh shit, no, like that, I can't do that with someone. Well, I can't
like
write.
Dating almost. Like, you have to like find people that you have a vibe with that you are going to be vulnerable with.
And some people just want to be single forever. So no.
Yeah. But I will say I've really grown to appreciate co-writing in Nashville. It's just, it's not that I didn't like it or didn't choose to do it. I had no idea it existed until I came to Nashville that summer. And they were like, do you have any writes set up? And I was like, what? Like, I just did not know what that meant.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it is dependent on what you want to get out of it. Yeah. I mean, like for me, that doesn't do anything creatively for me. It doesn't, if I was smarter and I was maybe more focused on having a career doing this, which, you know, I'm just a crazy person, like doing things on my terms. So that's probably not the best approach for most things in life. But then that would be maybe a door I'd be interested in going through. But for me, it's never been fulfilling in any way. And it always kind of, it always feels like it's something that's handcuffing me as opposed to freeing me up.
I totally get that because I don't write songs, but like I've been in bands where I compose the music for it. And like, even in those situations, not writing lyrics or anything, like I find it really awkward trying to like come up with something with someone. Like, I just find it so much better for me, like having the scenario where I kind of just do something on my own and then I bring it to you guys and maybe we make adjustments here and there. But like, yeah, like it's tough to do it with another person. Yeah, just the dynamic.
And music's already so collaborative. At least my approach to music is already so collaborative. It's like, no, I want this thing. Yeah. Like the song is mine.
Yeah.
We can.
I feel like I'm just more creative in solitude, I guess.
Yeah. That's a good way of putting
it. But it is, I mean, I feel like that is where I've been excited to experience and grow in that area in Nashville because that is so the culture here. And so I've realized, like, I'll listen to people, I'm like, I would never have phrased it that way. And it's cool to think that someone who grew up on, you know, Dolly Parton and old classic country, which I actually did not, could come together with someone who grew up on Beach Boys and Amy Grant and then coming together and like putting their styles together and like, Oh, you could do this, or then you could go to this chord. And that has been really good for me to grow and be challenged.
I think it's a good skill to have. Yeah. Like, it's almost its own skill and its own being able to, like, work with another person like that and kind of, like, bounce ideas off each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, and even, like, for me, when I'm, you know, I, don't get me wrong, I enjoy playing just solo by myself, but I really love playing with other musicians. That's a huge part of why I fall in love with music. And that part of it is very collaborative for me. I like bringing people on and having people. Yes, there will be set arrangements for certain things, and I can be very particular with how I want to present certain elements of music. But so much of what I love about playing with other people is that collaborative element and mm-hmm. is the ability to bring someone in because I want to hear their particular voice. So I think whatever approach you're taking, there are different outlets for that collaboration in music. And some people it can be more in the actual creation of the song itself. And for other people, it can be maybe more like myself. It can come out in the actual presentation of the thing, but you kind of just have to find what's comfortable for you and like what you enjoy with it. Cause everyone does approach that very, very differently as well.
Yeah.
Like for myself, I never, the last, geez, handful of years now, I exclusively write in character. So even just the idea of going up and saying like this song is about me.
Yeah.
Feels so alien because I've never thought about music like that really.
Yeah.
You know, like even when I wasn't writing maybe explicitly in character, it never felt like that. It was always exploration. It was always sort of the idea of almost like painting with music and like
yeah.
there's no right or wrong way to go about it.
No, I love that though. I love the idea of almost like putting on a character and writing from their perspective and just challenging yourself for different things. Because I always tell people, I'm like, they're like, how do you write songs? I'm like, it's literally my diary. Like, this is my life.
God,
I
wish I could do it that way. That'd be so much easier. Fuck.
But then, you know, it's like, it's interesting because, you know, there's just so many different stories out there in the world. Or, I mean, I just got sent a prompt by a friend to be like, hey, I have this idea for a song. And kind of for the first time, I wrote from someone else's perspective entirely. Like,
oh, interesting.
And so, although I could put enough of my experience in it that I could write that, but it was a cool like exercise.
So when you say that I'm going to get just nerd out on this. When you say that, do you find it through the process of doing that? Do you find that you need to find that commonality with that character and almost see, okay, I'm molding this person to be like me, or at least be in the ballpark? I'm like,
I probably did that because again, like I guess just like, it's really hard for me to like separate my experience or anything. Cause I mean, the issue was essentially like mental health and, you know, I've had really dark times in my life and I kind of drew from that experience. And so that probably is like imposing. And I sent it to him and I was like, does this resonate? Like, because I just wrote like your perspective I do not.
This seems like a left field question. But yeah. This is just where my mind goes when you say that. Do you tend to write, first line first, meaning the first line of the song is first line, or is there usually some sort of other hook that you can build off of?
It's either the first line or like the hook of the chorus.
Okay.
Usually the hook of the chorus. And it's usually, you didn't ask this, but I'm thinking about this right now. And I realized that I'm a delayed processor. And so, you know, I'm the type of person that like something will happen and I'll think of the exact perfect thing to say like 5 days later.
Of course,
you know, when you're like,
this podcast is going to be a nightmare for you.
Yeah, I'm going to listen back to it and just think of things I could have said. So I almost feel, because most of my songs, it's interesting if you look back on them, I'm either like talking to myself or talking to this, usually like this person, this male that hurt me or whatever. And it's like, oh, this is what, if I had had all my thoughts perfectly together, I would have said that right there. And so I don't know. It's just interesting. And I don't know why I just thought of that.
No, that is very interesting.
But it is like sometimes I'm like having a conversation with this person that I didn't get to have, or I'm learning my lesson that I didn't learn in that moment, but I'm learning it later and talking to myself about it. But it's usually almost like this ongoing conversation with myself, and then I'll land on some line that could either start the song, or usually it's like the hook of the chorus, and then I like go back from that. Because if you listen to my songs a lot, like the chorus usually always ends on the like, I'm going to Nashville, or my body betrays me. It's like that hook or that title of the song is usually where I've landed or the phrase that I thought of first. And then I'll almost write like backward from that.
Interesting. Yeah. I feel like that's probably, I think a lot of people do that. I feel like that is a set.
Yeah. I don't think that's anything like revelatory.
But I don't mean like that. I just mean that I think that that is a tried and true method. That's probably, again, if I was a smarter songwriter, that's probably the approach that I would take. Because
so do you go first line first? Is that your thing or?
So my process is a little bit fucked up because, so I'll sit with it. I'll get the character before he says anything or she says anything.
Yeah, I'm so intrigued by this now. Like, I want to interview you.
I'll have the character for a while. And then usually what's the thing that I love about it and the reason that I actually enjoy doing it this way is I'll have the character in my head and I'll think I'll have a pretty good idea of what that person thinks or believes or wants or all of those things. Mm. And then one day they'll say something and I'll think, fuck, that's not what I thought you were going to say. And it could be something, it could be something completely unrelated to who I thought that person, like whatever it might be. It could be a reaction to something. It could be just a random thought, but they'll say something. I think, fuck, I didn't think that that's who you were, but that's in there too.
That came out of nowhere.
And I think maybe we're another place where we might deviate creatively is I am intrigued by the song being a snapshot of that person. Right. Mm-hmm. And so with you, there's probably more meditation involved in the sense that, like you were saying, what you're creating is the response you would have had to that person if you had all the time in the world to think about it and really meditate on what your true feelings are.
Yeah.
Whereas for me, I'm more interested in just what are the things, what is that moment for that person?
Mm.
And in that moment, why do you say that? And maybe, you know, throughout the process of the song, obviously you can get a better understanding of what's going on under the surface possibly, but it has to be in the moment. And so once it's done, once the song is there, it is like this loop, feedback loop that never ends. It's for every time I enter that song, it's that moment in that character. And I don't get to, you know, I might know who that character is, whether it's having that person for years or however long to kind of sit with that person. But the only time in which I as a performer can look through that person's life and look through their eyes is that 3 minutes and 32 seconds or whatever. Yeah. And so it can feel almost kind of sad in a way because it's like, oh, I don't know what happens after this.
Yeah. You
know what
I mean?
But there's something kind of beautiful. But to me, there's something beautiful about just having to be completely in the moment with that thing.
So when you were little, like, God, I have so many questions for you now, but like, I'm wondering, like, when you were little, like pre-songwriting, one, you must have loved like fiction books or like movies.
Yeah.
But
I love
I'm
fiction.
Wondering, like, when you were like in a crowd, did you like see someone and almost like imagine what their life would be?
That's my favorite thing in the world. When I go out to eat, I hate going out to eat with other people other than Brian and Alexa. Obviously love you too. But I hate going out to eat with other people because all I want to do when I'm sitting there is I want to just imagine what other people, like I love people watching when I'm at a restaurant.
Yes, that's what it's I'm like thinking. It's like it probably, like your songwriting probably started with that. Like
we used to do this was every time we'd go to a restaurant, we'd be sitting at the bar and like we'd look at, you know, random people there and just like try to like imagine their whole backstory.
And yeah.
My ex and I used to play this game where we would guess how long, like we'd find the couples in the restaurant and we would guess how long we thought they were together for. Mm. Cause I love just
did
even
you,
just
did
something
you ask
similar.
Him the subtle
occasionally
body
I would,
language.
And then finally they're, you got to stop. But,
that could go wrong in so many ways, but
this is really fresh, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
We've been together 7 years. So well, that's a good thing probably. Yeah. Yeah. It certainly comes from that. It certainly comes from, some form of that at least. It's just, I love novels. I love film. I love all of that. I adore songwriting, but songwriting, I find the form that it can most often take, I just don't really have interest in because it's just, and the vast majority of songwriting that takes that form, I love. And but much of the songwriting that I have fallen in love with over my life deals with it that way. I just find creatively, I don't want to play in that sandbox. It doesn't really do anything for me.
Yeah.
So, and I.
But
again,
that's why
no
we
right
have so many
way.
Different sandboxes in the world and why like makes music so beautiful. It's like if everyone wrote the same way in the same, like,
yeah, and
that's
it's
what
for,
makes it so beautiful.
It's not for shock and awe, but there is something I get a kick out of going on stage and the first line of the song, everyone at the bar turns around like, what the fuck was that?
Yeah.
Like, there's something I really, I enjoy. There's something about that, that like, I would rather be that guy. And then all those people who turn around the bar hate what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Than be the person again, just for myself.
Yeah.
Than be the person who's up there. You know, not even burying their heart to the world, but just trying to express what's in. I have other ways of doing that in life, you know.
Yeah.
But again, that's just my approach. Yeah. But yeah,
I love that. I love that. It's like a just escape and imagination and fun and play. Which,
and I think for me, it gives me a better. Not we're going to make all this about me today. That's obviously what we do. No, but for myself, what it really does is it's an act of sympathy. It's an exercise in sympathy. Mm-hmm. I think for myself. Brian has known me long enough to know I cannot be the most sympathetic person. I'm a very like, not in the sense that I'm just, you know, blinders on all the time, but like, I have my people and my problems and my house to keep in order. And that's what I focus my life on.
Yeah.
And so outside of that, I can be kind of cold sometimes. And to me that I find what I really get out of the creative process of doing it that way is it forces me against my will sometimes to have to look at the world through somebody else's eyes.
Yeah.
And it's an exercise in sympathy of like, oh, there's no way to go up on stage and perform as a character or perform through the thoughts and feelings of, and words of another person and have you be present in any way that's not cynical.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's people who do it, and we've talked about this on the podcast before, there's people who do what I do, who go up there, and there's that kind of wink and the nod to the audience of like, you know, the character is the butt of the joke. Like, do you get like this asshole, you know?
Right.
And it's like, I have no, that's the last thing I want to do because that just seems so cynical to me. Mm. Again, this is all just my crazy mind.
No, this is fascinating but, like,
that just seems incredibly cynical. What I would rather do is go up and have to stand in that person's shoes and stare down an audience. And I can't do that while judging that person.
Yeah.
I might, when I'm not doing that, I might step aside and be able to look at that person and say, okay, how is this person different than me?
Yeah.
Why do they believe the things they do, et cetera?
Yeah.
And why are they maybe right on things I'm not right on?
Yeah.
But that is a far more, in my eyes, humanistic approach than to go up there and be like, you know, this fucking jackass, you hear what he's saying. You know, like that happens a lot in characters writing.
Yeah.
And I think that the people who do character writing best, whether it's people like Randy Newman or people like Warren Zevon or whomever, just there's so many people who do what I do.
Mm-hmm.
They don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
That it does come from a place of earnest and it comes from a place of, it's a very humbling thing to do that because the ego does have to be removed.
Yeah.
Like we were talking about this, I think when Matthew Welly was on, I want to release singles, but not release them under me. Like I want to do them as like, so I'll
like
make
a
like
different
fake
name
social
per
media.
Person?
Yeah. Like I'll make like fake social medias and stuff and like put them under the, like, I think that would be so fun.
Yeah. That'd be an interesting experiment. Just
yeah.
To see
I might do that for the next
one.
Yeah. I think that'd be so fun. Cause I like the idea of completely removing the ego from the creative process.
Yeah.
I like that
That's
for, again,
so
for myself, I like not being involved there, you know, or at least in that realm of things, you know?
Well, and I think even going back to the idea of like serving audience or serving your audience, there's so many different ways to do that. Like you're doing that in your own way.
Other end of the spectrum.
No, I'm saying, but I'm saying like, you are serving your audience in that way or like, and embodying these characters or personifying things or issues or people. And who knows if the guy that like turns his head at the bar and is shocked, like maybe you like act like wrote about him, like it, like, and you know, like, and he's identifying with the song. I don't know. Like just because I'm saying I have that like mentality doesn't mean that there's only one way to quote unquote, like serve an audience, like you getting up there and doing what you do and like being your authentic self and telling these stories and telling these characters stories, like that to me is serving an audience. It's just like everyone has their own different way of doing it.
Yeah, and everyone as a consumer is looking for different things in music. And I think that's one of the things that's hard as a musician, as people, I mean, everyone in this room absolutely loves music. And I think it can be hard for us when we knock up against those people who music maybe is a more service level thing, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's the people who are into, you know, top 20 radio, like pop radio or whatever. And there's nothing wrong with that. And some of that music is fantastic. But those people that it's not, those people for whom music is not their world. It's just something that they are sort of, that they kind of half listen to in the car when they're driving to work, and they don't really think about it, and they'll, you know, that's most of it for most people. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I think that can be a hard pill to swallow for all of us because we are so in love with it for whatever silly reason.
No, that's so true. I mean, and there was someone the other day that was even saying like, yeah, I don't pay attention to lyrics at all. And I'm sitting here being like,
this guy right here.
That's funny.
Well, okay, so I'm interested in hearing.
I do a little bit, but it's secondary.
So you're
to
like
me.
At a concert and all you're hearing is melody, cadence, that, or...
That is the thing that I look for
in
the music I want to listen to.
That's so interesting.
If there's good lyrics, great. That's an awesome bonus. But for me, the main thing is like just, you know, good melody, good, you know, arrangement, the way they compose.
Brian's been my only guitar player for about a decade, more than a decade now. I don't think he could tell you one line from any of my songs, which I love. There's something about that that I absolutely love.
I can probably think of one if I really tried.
Well, that's funny because, you know, musicians that I work with, I'll be like, yeah, and then with this lyric, you go to the one or whatever, and they're like, I don't know what you're singing. Yeah. You know, like what bar is it or something? And I'm like, what? Be, like,
I've played with people who they're like, oh, like on this line, go to the, and I'm like, you have to tell me, like,
And that's so funny. You know, it's just third, all the different brains of the world. Chorus. Exactly. Yeah,
that's where my brain
there
is.
Go.
Yeah,
I don't know what you're singing.
It's also again to me. What's more important than all of that is the sound of the thing. So oftentimes what's so important lyrically isn't necessarily what the lyric is conveying, but does it sound right? Because that's the thing that I think is so important about music. And the thing that's often overlooked in songwriting is there people will very often compare, and usually these are people who are outside of the musical world or the songwriting world. They'll compare poetry on the page to songwriting lyrics in a song, and it's apples and oranges, because yes, there is oftentimes poetry is spoken and there is that language to poetry when it is a person's performing, but poetry is words on a page that make your hair stand on end, as Ginsberg said. It's like but it's on the page. It's that understanding of what is my relationship to these words on the page? Whereas music it's completely different. Music is, how does this thing sound in the word? What it looks like on the page is completely irrelevant. Like, you know, I have books and books and books of some of my favorite songwriters' lyrics at home. And I always think it's silly that I have them whenever I look at them. Cause I think this isn't what I always think of is, you know, have you ever seen those paintings of when people first came to the New World and they were drawing animals that they had never seen before? And these animals look absolutely nothing like the animal. No. Like, it's insane.
I don't think I've seen that.
It's insane. Like when people, the first time a person saw, you know, insert whatever animal they'd never seen before. And it's them trying to somehow dictate this animal down, but there's just no way for them to do it because it's just not something they've been exposed to. So, you know, you look at this picture of whatever it is and you think that is absolutely nothing like what a whale looks like or whatever. It looks like some monster from whatever. That's exactly how I feel when I look at written lyrics on a page. It's so alien because that's not the thing. The thing is that thing spoken live. And so I believe, and again, this is just me fucking rambling like an idiot as usual, but the thing in the moment alive, spoken, how it sounds, that's the art of the thing. The art of songwriting is not dictating this down on the page. Does this line work with this line? Can I? There's all of that there, but that is in service to how the thing sounds in the room with you. And that to me is the skill of songwriting. And that is what I think is the Sudoku puzzle of fun when you're putting a song together, is it doesn't just have to work on a page like a poem does. It has to work aloud. And when I do it, it's like another layer of complexity because I'm having to do that through another person. So when I think of it, when I think of my songwriting, it's not just, okay, what does this person think? It's how do they speak? Like, what is their diction? What is their vocabulary? Mm-hmm. Sometimes characters will have, they'll have very limited vocabulary, but they'll know one big word and they want to use that. There's so many little
the
things
cornucopia.
Like that. Yeah, no, exactly. But there's so many things like that, that when you're, when you are removing yourself from the equation and you're having to deal with someone else's worldview, there's all of those things at play, on top of the fact that it has to sound right. So it's like levels of complexity to a puzzle. Whereas on the surface level, the most fundamental and important thing is it has to sound good. It has to sound right. And that's the thing that most people, I think, for whatever reason, a lot of people forget that.
Yeah.
Where it's like, no.
And I think it's the same for like instrumentalists too. It's not what you play. It's how you play it.
Mm. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, another thing we've talked quite a bit about on here, because I feel like it always comes up, is rhythm in music and how important feel is. It's such a difficult thing, and not just the feel of a drummer or bass player, the feel of every component of music. It's such an elusive thing, because you can dictate that down on the page and play that, you can play that back as written, and it sounds absolutely abhorrent. Mm-hmm. Or you can put life into it somehow through rhythm, and those same notes on the page come alive all of a sudden. It's like, mm-hmm. like to me, okay, no one shoot me. I'm not a Rolling Stones guy. I've just never been but they've got some fucking banger. They have some fucking bangers. And a song I'll listen to quite a bit is Beast of Burden. Mm. I'll put that song on as the songwriting of the Rolling Stones. Personally, again, this is just me, not my thing. I don't think they're great songwriters. That being said, that song, you could put any melody over that song.
Right.
It doesn't. That groove is so fucking good.
Yeah.
I will put that on and I'll wish the intro just lasted like 7 minutes, because that groove of that band is so absurdly good. Mm. And then he starts singing and like, yeah, it's fun. But you're like, you could be singing any melody over this and I wouldn't fucking care.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Like a good groove can really make a song. Like you listen to like a lot of like James Brown tracks.
Yeah.
Like his band will be playing the same, like, you know, 4-to-8-bar loop for like 10 minutes straight. And you never get
so
tired
good.
Of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I love me some live James Brown too. His live bands were always...
Oh, those videos.
So good.
This is a little, I mean, not James Brown. However, there's a Chuck Berry song called Let's Do Our Thing Together.
Yes.
And I do it at all my shows. And it's the same loop for 10 minutes, but it's such a jam. And then the best part is like when it's such a like B-side buried track of Chuck Berry. And I love it when people like know what the song is. But it's a similar thing. Like you could be singing about anything and it's just... The all the pieces are together.
I truly think Chuck Berry is one of the greatest American songwriters of all time.
In the lyrics of that, even
I think he's
innovator
really,
for sure.
Yeah.
He's one of those people where he's often, I think, thrown into the conversation because of his role in the platform of rock and roll and the creation of rock and roll, and what just historically what that was. And all of that's completely valid and true. He's also, I just think, one of the pound for pound songwriting greats. You can put Maybelline up against any song that has ever been written on the face of this earth. And I mean, like that is a song where I think, and so many of his songs are like this. And I'm just going to nerd out on Chuck right now. That's a song where you can look at it on the page and be in awe of it.
Yeah.
And then when you hear that spoken or sang, you're even more in awe of it, because you think, God fucking damn, it's better than it was on the page.
Yeah,
definitely an innovator in the guitar world, too.
Oh, yeah. I love his guitar playing. I adore his guitar playing. Songwriting is the best. It's the best. There's nothing like it. Really is nothing like it.
I mean, I don't know. It's just the idea of literally creating something out of nothing. I mean, it's... air and thoughts and imagination and characters and feelings, and we are putting it into a not tangible but like a thing that gets put out in the world that will last longer than we do. And it's cool.
And
I totally agree.
Another component of songwriting that I think is really beautiful is and this is a very difficult thing to articulate, so I'm probably not going to do this very well, but something that I always find really powerful in art is the thing existing. I'm trying to think of the best way to frame this, but the thing existing is the whatever it is you are experiencing in art, whether it's a film, whether it's a song, whether it's a poem, what have you. It's the experience of the thing that is the thing. So what I mean by that is, you can take something more abstract, right? Like, and there are certain songwriters who have delved in this world, whether it's Dylan or whoever else. And there are certain filmmakers who delve into this. Like one of my favorite directors, we just lost very sadly, David Lynch, which I don't really usually get upset when people I don't know pass, but with him, I was very, very sad because his work means so much to me. And one of the things that he would always get incredibly frustrated about is he would spend all of this time making this movie. And then afterwards, people would ask him, well, what does that mean? What does the movie mean? It was this constant cycle throughout his whole creative life. And he would always say that's the thing. The movie is the thing. That's the thing I'm making. It's like, it can elicit questions and it can elicit certain responses, but that is what I'm making. You've seen it. You've seen the thing. And that can translate to music too. I mean, I think probably the greatest album of all time, certainly one of them, is probably Blonde on Blonde. It certainly is Blonde on Blonde. And there are lines in those songs that I'll spend the rest of my life gnawing over. And those meanings for me will change and transcend as I change and transcend, because that's what it is. It's the song itself. And there's something beautiful about that in art. And I think oftentimes people can overlook that, or oftentimes people can not understand the game that's being played, because they can think that, there's some great meaning to all of this, which I personally think that there is, but it doesn't have to be in a song.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be in a movie.
Or for the consumer, it's like the meaning is what you want it to be or what you take away from it. Like, it's almost like if I were David, I'd be like, well, what do you think? You know, like that's almost like what it's for too, is for that to be processed by the person who's experiencing them or experiencing that song, and kind of they get to decide. Like, it's art. Like, I put a song on the internet and I don't get to tell every single person that's ever listened to it how they should listen to it and what it's about.
And nor should you. Yeah.
And nor should you. Yeah. Exactly. It's like that. I was telling someone the other day about, or just this idea of, like, I have learned, I feel that any kind of work of art, whether it's, I'm a visual artist as well, so I paint, and then music especially, but it's like you have to be so attached and detached at the same time. You have to be so attached into the creation of it. I mean, some songs come in like 5 minutes, but you have to genuinely be attached in the creation of it and feel and think or thought or put yourself in that person's shoes, whatever it is. But then it's like after that is done and produced and put out into the world, like you have zero control.
Exactly.
And you have to be actually like completely detached from the outcome. Just
move on to the next thing.
Or else you'll just get stuck as a creator.
Absolutely. Mm.
Which I've been in that position many times where it's like, you know, my material's out and obviously there's like a cycle and things to do and protocol, if you will, of like how to do your promo. But it's kind of like after that, like, man, your song's done. Like, it's time to create something more, else. You know, instead of like, no, but did you hear that, you know, like, or I don't, that didn't get the feature that I wanted, or maybe it did, but only bots liked it or whatever, you know, it's like, it's just a weird thing that it's such a, I don't know, juxtaposition of like all the attachment that it takes to create it. And then the detachment that you have to have literally to release it.
It's a scary thing, I think, for a lot of creative people. Many creative people I find can be like myself and be hyper aware of the specifics of their art. And I think that's important. I think it's important to have that keen eye for what it is that you're doing. But that can come back to bite you in the butt, because once that's over, you need to be able to do exactly what you said. You need to be able to let go and move on to the next thing. And for many creative people who have that disposition, I think it can really work against them. And I think for myself, a huge part of what has made me a happy person with my art is learning the skills to allow me to just let go and not care. When I say not care, I don't mean not care about the process of creating the thing. Mm-hmm. But for me, I'm probably on the other side of the fence than yourself. I don't really care what other people think of them. It's just, I do it because it's incredibly fulfilling to me and because I feel like I'm a better person when I do it.
Yeah.
And if someone gets something rewarding or fulfilling or just if what I make has an effect on anyone, then that's beautiful. And I think that's fantastic. And I find that as a consumer of art, most, if not all, of my favorite artists that really move me and that have had profound effects on how I view the world, look at it through the same lens. Mm-hmm. And it's like a good conversation right now. It's this hyper awareness of trying to be as in the moment as possible. Like right now, this is what I love doing about it. This is why I'm just hooked on doing this silly show is I love that nobody knows what's going to happen next.
Yeah.
Like there's this fantastic song called, I think it's actually called Willie Mays' Epic Bat by Chuck Prophet. You know Chuck Prophet? Great songwriter.
That sounds very familiar.
Been around for a while and just a phenomenal songwriter. I think it's called Willie Mays' Epic Bat, or it might be just Willie Mays. One of my favorite songs of his. And
the infomercial guy?
The baseball player.
Oh. Baseball player. You're thinking of Billy Mays, not Willie Mays.
Okay. And it's this whole really, I'll wrap this up here in a second, but it's this really beautiful song about him going up to bat in this game. And he somehow, through just sheer incredible songwriting, because Chuck Prophet is I would love to have him in this seat because he's just such an amazing songwriter. He kind of squares this song it's this moment of him going up to bat, and it's all of the things happening in the world in this one moment of him going up to bat. Mm. And he somehow, through just incredible artistry, ties in all of these seemingly unconnected things in the world to this one moment of this baseball coming at him. And he doesn't have it on the album version, but when I saw him play this quite a few years ago now. And when he did it, there was this moment that every time I listened to the album, I wish it was on there. After the final chorus, they go into like this long kind of guitar outro that's very different from the rest of the song. Mm-hmm. And there's this pause, and he said on stage, 'cause in baseball and in rock and roll, you don't know what happens next. Mm. And then they go into this really, just really stunning outro. And that's exactly that's the whole creative process right there. Mm. It's that feeling of following the present as much as you can, mm-hmm. and trying to be as present as you can be, but not knowing what the hell is going to happen next, and being ready for not knowing what happens next. Like, that's why I love doing this. I just don't know. This conversation could go anywhere.
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah. You could come out with a question from nowhere.
Everybody go listen to Chuck Prophet. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. No, I love that. And I think that also is probably, you're getting to a really good point of what I think a really good quality of a songwriter is not letting that intimidate or scare you, but letting that be an opportunity. Mm-hmm. Like when you're writing a song and being like, all right, I don't know what's going to happen next, or like, what is going to happen next? Like, that's the exciting thing, like anything. And almost like having fun with that in that imagination, whether it's your own story or, you know, the characters that you're embodying. It's like, I think that you kind of just hit on a really cool aspect or quality that will serve songwriters well, is almost just having a very kind of playful approach to like, okay, what's going to happen next?
And it transcends all art. I mean, I paint, and I love painting, and it's the same thing. It's like, you don't know where the next brushstroke's going to go. It's like, that's what's so,
yeah.
that's what's so beautiful about art, I think. And that's,
but the important part is that you like do it, that you like
exactly.
paint the stroke or exactly. that you write the word or that maybe you sing the song live and see how it hits and maybe totally bombs, whatever. But you're like, all right, you know, just,
but,
I don't know.
But also the, again, just to look at kind of consistencies here or through lines here. So many of the creative people that I love in all sorts of different worlds of art take chances, and sometimes the chances don't pay off, but then you still take another chance and maybe that one's going to pay off, maybe it won't. And then you take another, like it's this recognition of you can't stay static. You right. have to be fluid. You have to be in the moment.
Yeah.
And all of the best artists I find in life, again, whatever medium they're working in, recognize that. And, mm-hmm. and whether it's, whether, I mean, Brian knows this about me. The only thing I love more in my life besides music is film. I'm a massive just film nerd.
I could have guessed that with the way you write your songs. So I love characters.
I absolutely like, just love film. I think there's just something so beautiful about it. But the 2 pound for pound greatest directors of all time in my eyes, and I think just sort of unequivocally, frankly, are probably Kurosawa and Hitchcock. I mean, there's so many phenomenal filmmakers from, excuse me, just so many phenomenal filmmakers, but Leone and Godard, and just the list could go on and on. But but Hitchcock's fascinating because when I look at the two of them as directors, they deal with it so differently. Kurosawa, his entire career was like just sharpening steel. It was like every movie built on top of the movie before. His skills kept getting better and better and better. And it was like refining and refining and refining. Until finally you get to Ran, which is like just, I mean, unbelievable that that's even a thing he could make. Whereas Hitchcock, it was all about, I have this idea. Let me see if I can do this now. And it was this constant pivoting. It was, I mean, everything from, you know, whether it's Rope and thinking, you know what, I want to make a whole movie where I want to see if I can do the whole thing in one shot. And let me see if I can get away with that. And the entire exercise of the thing is just that, is let me see if I can do this. Let me see if I can pull this off. Mm-hmm. Or whether it's The Birds, which, I mean, like, let's be frank. The Birds is probably not the top tier of Hitchcock's films. But what he set out to do in that movie, which he said explicitly, I wanted to see if I could convince an audience that this was happening. And you watch that movie all these years later. Yeah, it's not on the same level artistically, I find, as Vertigo or Rear Window or what have you. But he accomplished it. He made a whole generation scared of crows.
Where you think,
but you're watching, you're like,
yeah.
I couldn't do that better now in 2025. Right. Like I just couldn't do that better. Like the mission was accomplished, and both of those men, masters, like absolute masters in their fields, but had completely different approaches. One was just this constant slow improvement of the craft and trying to get better at, can I be a better filmmaker every time? And it was like, it's just this slow uphill crawl, Kurosawa's entire career, which is just staggering. And Hitchcock, it was this, let me see if I can pull this off. Let's see if I can do this.
Yeah.
And there's not a right or wrong way to do it, but they both yield unbelievable results. And it's just finding for you as a creative person, what's my approach here? And that can change. That approach can change. And you can, you don't have to stay with one approach for the rest of your life, but it's, that I think is just beautiful. And I think that, again, that's something that transcends any one form of art, but you got to find what you like doing.
What works. No, for sure. And I think that that's, you know, an important thing is to really refine, you know, what that could be for whatever that season, that album, that piece of work, whatever it is. And again, like kind of, I don't know, listen to that inner guide of like, what's my approach to this one? What, instead of, you know, what other people might tell you is the right thing to do. This is how we do things. This is what's the best way. But even just you comparing those two directors. And it sounds like they both kind of like actually like found their groove and stuck with it, which, you know, in the end might work really well for someone to kind of stay consistently doing the like, let's throw the spaghetti noodle against the wall and see if it sticks. Or, you know, let's always start with this one shot and like see if we can get it better than the last time, whatever it is. But yeah, I mean, I think that that's a lot of just, I think as a creative, paying attention to like yourself and your process and I don't know, just again, like being I don't, like finding what works for you or for that project and doing it. But I think at the end of the day, it sounds like we're just like both saying like the similar thing of like, just do it, like yeah. do it.
And another thing that I'm curious about with yourself, are there those artists that when you sit down and listen to them or you sit down and watch them or whatever it might be, that you feel, even though you may not know mm-hmm. what they're going to do next, mm-hmm. that you feel in good hands? Who are those artists for you that when you experience whatever it is that they're creating for that first time,
yeah.
however much skepticism might be present,
yeah.
you feel as though, oh, okay, I'm in good hands. I know I'm set.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to do a couple names that like, I'm going to say, but I knew them first.
That's what this is for, really.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I'm going to throw out a name that everyone's going to be like, of course. But, like, you know. But, so, there's a couple different songwriters, of course. But I have loved, like, the full body of Brandi Carlile's work. And I discovered her in my freshman year of college. I'm like, should I say the date? no, but, like, 2006, 2007, like she would come play small little bars in Austin. And I just like, I've loved her work and it's inspired me a lot as a songwriter. There's an Austin based songwriter, David Ramirez, that I love. And like, man, I feel like no matter what he releases, I'm going to love it every time, just the way that he writes and kind of bears a soul. And then of course there's classics that like I grew up on. I mean, I love Patty Griffin. I love her. Just these songwriters. So yeah, there's definitely a lot. Or, you know, there's also, you think of like, I mean, they haven't put out a record in a long time. Like, I love you too. You just know like every album's like going to be their true sound and yet so different, but it's going to be really good. So I don't know. That's a good question. I need to think about the through lines of some of the influences.
It's just a great, I find it's just a really, it sounds counter to what I was saying earlier, whereas you don't know what's going to happen next when you are in that presence, or when you are in the presence of someone who's truly trying to be present and trying to create something alive. But just knowing that there are people that have that skill set and have that ability to take you on an adventure with whatever it is that they're doing. Like, I'm trying to think of an example. Like, I don't know if you're a Kubrick fan, but one of the last Kubrick films that I was yet to expose myself to, and this was not that long ago, was Full Metal Jacket, which I, generally speaking, the two kinds of movies I don't do war movies, and I don't do, war movies can be rough for me and biopics can be rough for me. I just don't think that they really, I don't think they work generally. There are phenomenal war movies and there are phenomenal biopics, but on the whole, I think those are kind of two of the rougher genres to tackle in film. I just don't think they generally work that great. So I was kind of putting off watching this movie for a long time because I love Kubrick and I respect him so much. I was like, I don't want to watch him make a shitty war movie where he's like wagging his finger at me for 3 hours. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I don't want to do that. And I remember the first time I watched that movie, it was late one night, it was dark and you know the movie was turned up real loud. And the movie starts and there's, before a single shot is shown, it starts in this boot camp. And we hear these kids at boot camp, like marching and they're given, they're, you know, being yelled at, et cetera. And I just had the biggest shit eating grin on my face before I even saw a single frame, because it was in that moment I thought, oh, I'm good. Like, I'm in his hands. Yeah. It was almost this thing that he was like, there was this moment of telling the audience as a director, you're good. Like, just trust me, you're good.
I love that.
When artists can do that. I love when I sit down with a piece of music that I might be skeptical towards.
Yeah.
And even if I don't know what the approach is going to be, even if I don't know how it's going to be, how it's going to be tackled, The artist's skill set rises to the occasion. Mm-hmm. And when you're reminded of that, I think it's so beautiful. I think it's just such a great thing. And it leaves me thinking, it energizes me. It makes me want to go make more stuff.
I know that's I feel like a call to action for me.
Yeah.
Like how could I do that with my songwriting or with everything I release, you know?
Yeah.
So I love that idea. I love that idea. You're in good hands.
Yeah, it's a nice little thing.
Yeah.
So what do you have coming out next? What's next on the horizon for you?
So I mean this has been an interesting, you know, process of learning how to release music. Yes. I did my first recordings before COVID happened. Like my first EP release was supposed to be March 2020 and we delayed the party by 2 weeks and then 2 years.
Very fun.
I have like songs in the vault. Like it's just kind of crazy. Oh, wow. Like, you know, just kind of figuring out. And plus I had to learn so much about the music industry and how to release music. Mm-hmm. And so I've kind of kept songs in the vault as I've been learning, and then I've learned this lesson, all right, now I can release another one. I've kind of just paced it that way. I gave you the full history answering this question because
you heard me talk? I babble, okay? So I babble.
But I do feel like I'm kind of figuring this out right now. My next release will be Body Betrays Me.
Okay.
Which I sang today.
Yes.
I believe it is actually lyrically a song that I'm really, really proud of. And it is a heartbreak song. And I often try to find little windows of opportunities where the song might align with the time, a holiday, like whatever, just it's like a relevant release. And so I might release that around Valentine's Day, just as a, hey, if you don't need a love song this Valentine's Day and you just need a good old heartbreak song, like I got you. So I think it's going to be somehow around that in February. But we're getting all the visuals and everything. I treat every single, at this point, I've been waterfalling them. And everyone's had their own visual component. Almost like they're like people that notice what I'm doing say that I release singles like albums just because it has
that's exactly what I've been doing. I think it's great.
Yeah, visuals. It has like everything has a theme, like costume design, everything. And so that's all in the works right now.
That's fantastic.
Body Betrays Me.
I love it. Yeah. The I think of it like islands, and I found recently I used to be an album guy because as a consumer, that's how I take in music. Do you listen to singles? Do you listen to albums? What's kind of your general approach?
I do both, but at least like. Where I am in my music career, it's just helping me make a splash every time I make.
That's what I've found.
Release music and grab people's, and I don't want to be insulting to humans, but our attention span is now less than a goldfish.
This is very true.
I'm so torn about that because I feel the same way because as a consumer.
Right.
I listen to albums. That's just how I take in music most of the time.
Yeah,
I do too. Yeah.
And it's just, again, there's not a right or wrong way to do it. That's just how I do it.
Yeah.
So for years, that's how I, as a creative person, made things. I made albums.
Yeah.
And then probably about 5 years ago now, I started doing the single thing, which I like. Cause like you said, it's very, very creatively fulfilling for myself to have these islands where each song can be its own little creative journey, and then you can move on to the next island. I think that's a great way to do it.
Yeah.
But it is different.
Yeah.
It's different. Like right now I'm starting to get the itch for the first time in a long time to like, oh, it's time to put an album together. Yeah. And I think you just like anything, you have to be, you have to listen to yourself and follow that.
Well, and now there's no rules that like the songs that I've been releasing since 2021 at the end of this year, I'll probably put them all on an album. It's all mastered to be an album. So who says I'm totally independent.
Exactly.
So I can put them all on an album at the end of the year and presented in a new way. It's a deluxe album, whatever. Put like, you know,
put some more tracks on there, whatever you want to do.
So, I mean, I think that, you know, with independent musicians like myself or you, or, you know, just there's so many options, and it's kind of like, okay. And then even you look at like Casey Musgraves, who did Deeper Well, and then like a year later, Cardinal got put, you know, was topping the charts because she just made a music video for it and started pushing it. So it's like, there's just a lot of options.
There are so many ways, ways to do it. It's I also have a hard time when I think about it because the knee jerk reaction I have is we are in this TikTok age of everyone has a 4 second attention span.
Yeah.
Which we haven't even talked about TikTok yet.
Yeah.
but also I think at the same time, people's attention spans have never been longer because, you know, I'll listen to a 4 hour podcast on whatever, you know, people will listen to this whole thing. It's like, it's this weird dichotomy at play where I psych myself out and I don't know, maybe I don't really don't know what is the right view to have, but I find I can psych myself out because I can think everyone's Yeah. The attention span's non-existent.
Yeah.
You're playing to lowest common denominator. You know what I mean? Like yeah. that sort of thing. And you kind of get down on yourself. And then I think when I take a step back and actually look at the whole of kind of like what's going on in the world, I think, I don't know, like it's never been a better time to make albums. It's never been a better time to do all of these sort of long form things that are more, demanding of an audience. Yeah. I mean, it is a lot
Maybe
to ask an audience
to the occasion.
Yeah.
I think what I've kind of started to do is a little bit like what we were talking about in like the creation of the artwork and then releasing it is, and maybe this is like a selfish way of thinking about this, I don't know, but like what would I enjoy? Like what would I enjoy?
Oh, it's the only way to do
for
it.
For myself to make and to consume too.
Yeah.
You know, so like on, I don't know, like would I kind of think to myself, like as I'm scrolling through social media, like what would grab my attention? Or even sometimes just like, okay, if I did little 30-second things for this last song, like, cool. Do I have even the idea for a full-length music video? Like, why not? Maybe I'm more of, like, the Hitchcock person. Like, you know, just, like, let's do it. Like, what do I want for this song? And what would I enjoy? Or, like, when I paint a painting, now I'm like, well, what would I want in my dream home? And then I paint that, and then that's the first painting that sells because it comes from this, like, real, authentic place. Mm-hmm. And so whether your thing is, like, 4 seconds or 4 minutes, the human spirit can tell authenticity and realness no matter the time frame. And so I think that's kind of important to get to as like a creator. Of course, after you put it out into the world, then you can't have control, you know, how much people watch of it or not, but you know that you created something from a very genuine place. And if you can watch it in 10 years and be proud of it, then like, great, that's cool. Mm-hmm. Like that's what you should be doing.
And I think you just said something that really sticks with me and I'm going to gnaw on for a while, which is if something is of quality, it's almost irrelevant whether it's 4 seconds long or, you know, 4 hours long. Mm-hmm. It's just maybe different ways of zooming in or zooming out on that thing. Like for me, the best stories, I can tell you the best stories in 4 seconds, mm-hmm. and I can tell you that same incredible story in 4 hours. Mm-hmm. And if the story is truly that good, it will grip you and move you in both instances. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's just maybe a preference thing.
Yeah.
Or maybe just necessity. What, you know, how much time you got, that kind of thing.
And that's why, you know, you can put the preview on Instagram for 4 seconds and have the 4 minute long video on YouTube. I mean, that's a thing too. It's like as much as we can gripe or I'm trying to overgeneralize, you know, like I can gripe about, you know, like, oh, it's the TikTok world and that's so annoying. It's like, man, like we have been given tools that we can, as creators, put whatever we want, however we want.
Oftentimes to our own detriment.
Yeah. On the internet, you know, or like our music is now on a global platform that can have legs wherever it wants to go or can go or, you know. And one of the things, like when I moved to Nashville in 2019, that kind of a music mentor told me that I think is just still relevant today and it has always been, is that like cream rises to the top. And it's a very like old saying, but at the same time, like good art will get recognized. And mm-hmm. oftentimes we're seeking like the recognition and maybe even like the monetary compensation. And then we take our eyes off of like actually creating like good art. Mm-hmm. And so if you're doing that and you're creating something that you're convicted about, that you love, that is visually beautiful, whatever, then okay, cool. I have a website, I have TikTok, I have YouTube, I have Instagram, I have X Threads, and I'm not even saying I do all of this or do it well. However, like if I looked at like, oh my gosh, like I created something that I love and these like brilliant minds of the universe have created 6 platforms that I can get this to the masses, like how cool is this?
That's incredible.
Like, that is a tool for me to use that, you know, is really, really cool. And y'all can be my 159th follower on TikTok. Like I have now, it's funny, like last night. So for anyone listening to this podcast, you know, later, we are the night, or the day after TikTok's ban last night. So it went dark last night and then reappeared around noon today.
I didn't even know.
Can we talk about this? Is that not weird to you? I got so excited
because, so I do our social media stuff. And I got so excited because in my head I was like, great, one last thing I need to post to. And now it's back already. What the hell?
I know. I do feel like that. I don't know, like, what in, like, the world powers, if that was, like, a test or, you know, like, who knows? Because
it seems weird to me that they ban it and then less than 24 hours later, it's back.
It's
and then
back.
Both the messages, they said, like, oh, like, don't worry, Trump saved us, but he's not even president yet. Yeah. So, like, what the fuck is
going on? You got a whole other 24 hours, guys.
I smell something fishy with this whole TikTok thing. It was kind of weird. Because yesterday, I don't understand.
I went on yesterday to post something for the podcast, and all of a sudden it was just
gone.
It was funny because, like, the app's clearly running because you could, you know, you whenever you click into TikTok,
right,
it immediately just pulls something up for you, and so there's stuff running in the background, but it will pull up this message saying, you know, hey, we're sorry, we don't exist anymore. And yeah, that was a little, the messaging was a little weird. It was a little weird.
Yeah, but I don't mind that America pulled a power move and was like, hey, like, we can ban, like, if you are going to do X, Y, or Z or this, like, we have the,
totally
that, we can ban you. And so I think whether it was a flex or whether, you know, like, whatever a scare tactic, whatever it was, but I mean, I did, well, the reason why I brought that up too is because I was like, man, I haven't really utilized this tool. You know, maybe I missed out on an opportunity. You know, am I just being like, you know, stubborn or old school, whatever. And I was like, all right, if TikTok got banned, like, if it comes back, if it somehow in a year comes back, like, I will commit
12
to
hours later,
content.
Like,
yeah,
later.
And then, like, this, and then, like, today I get, like, 3 texts of, like, TikTok's back, and I'm like, oh god, like, okay, but, you know, like, I, like, made this commitment to myself, and so I'm like, well, shoot, now it looks like I'm gonna go get my light ring.
There you go.
But I don't know. It's funny. I mean, I you know, did that whole spiel about using tools. And now I'm, you know, preaching to the stubborn person that has like 150 followers. But anyway, so if you're listening to this, follow me on TikTok.
We'll link it in the description for you.
So maybe even this can go viral, but you know, you but I don't know. Like I am saying this, and that is like my attempt to think about it as opportunity and tool. Mm-hmm. And again, the cream rises to the top because I'm going for a long career. I'm not going for, man, you know, I'm going to tell my grandchildren or, you know, I don't know if I'm going to, you know, so I'm going to tell, like, in 30 years, like, I don't have to tell people, like, yeah, I went viral on TikTok one time and then I went on a tour, but I didn't actually know how to plug in my guitar and so it was a mess and da 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 da. And then, like, that's my legacy. Like, no, like, I feel like there are a lot of people that, and I'll just speak for myself. It's like, no, I want a long career of, like, consistent stuff. And I think that, you know, TikTok can be a tool, but I'm not actually, like, crazy worried about, you know, the people that are consistently putting out good work that somehow we're going to get overlooked for people that had 1 8-second viral video, if that makes sense.
Oh, for sure. Mm-hmm. And historically, it's interesting to think about as well, because a lot of great artists, most great artists, are not recognized in their time. Mm-hmm. And it's only through that distance where we can look back over our shoulders and see, oh, this has lasted. This mm-hmm. is stuck around. It's only through that that we can truly see that, oh, this thing is of the quality that we thought it was. Mm-hmm. There are some artists who, for whatever reason, are recognized in their time. And I think it's mm-hmm. really important to, I think it's really important to be aware of those people because they're few and far between mm-hmm. the great artists who, for whatever reason, are recognized in their moment of contemporary society. This person's doing something important. Mm-hmm. And any time that I get a chance to celebrate those people, I certainly want to just grab mm-hmm. it by the horns because it just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
That's just not the way that art moves through the world. And just in the last, even just the last 24 hours since David Lynch died, it's funny. I've so much of my, I don't really interact a ton with social media, but so much of it is just, I'm sure it's just who I follow and all mm-hmm. all that crap. But so much of it is just this outpouring and appreciation of this amazing artist. And that's a really beautiful component of our sort of connected world right now is the fact that we can all celebrate these things. Whereas, you know, even 10, 20 years ago, that wasn't on the table. It's just not how we, went about doing things. But I think it's really, there are certainly upsides to the social media world as much as I think we can all get hung up on the drama and the cons
that comes with it.
Yeah. And also, I mean, I think that's like one thing too, is that I think that every creative also has to do some inner searching to kind of figure out like what they truly want to do with their creativity and what will make them actually genuinely happy. Because for some people, man, I have the voice of an angel, but all I want to do is sing in the shower and like, and sing to, you know, if people have kids, like sing my kids to sleep, or, you know, with my church background, I'm thinking like, you know, some people are so excited just to like be in their choir, you know, and then for some people, they're like, no, I want to sell out Bridgestone Arena. You know, it's like, I do think that there's an interesting thing. And I think even some people can like hear that voice and it's like, well, don't you want to be famous? Like,
and
don't
one's
you want to do
more
this?
Noble than the other.
That's
they're
exactly
just different,
right.
Yeah.
It's like literally like who told everyone with a creative gift that it had to be for something, for recognition, for money, for, you know, the viral fame. Like, I don't know. It's just interesting that it's like, I don't know. I think we take creativity and we see this like one size fits all idea of success with it. And that's just simply not the case. And, you know, I don't even know if human beings are like actually truly like created to be famous. It's such a weird thing to me, actually, like this idea. And a lot of times, like the people that even get to the top are like, this is miserable.
I cannot imagine a worse curse in this life.
And so,
it's
like, but isn't it funny too, that that's what we're told is the ultimate reward for our creativity, is that we would be famous and have X amount of followers and have people outside our doors wanting to take creepy pictures of us or whatever, when like maybe that's not even what we want in the first place. It's just, it's interesting to me that, I don't know, like we're just talking about like kind of ultimately like, you know, hoping to get our art out there, or, you know, hoping that this might happen, or hoping that this might happen. But, and yeah, I am pursuing a career in music, but even moving to Nashville, you would think, yeah, I'm like got to Nashville and I just can't wait to be at the Grand Ole Opry. And it's like, I've actually like gotten to Nashville and I'm like, man, what do I really want actually? Because I don't know if I actually want that. Like, or do I? And if I do, like be honest with myself and like go for it, or, you know, do that. But it's almost been a little bit of the opposite of like, man, like, I don't know. I think maybe even just an introspective thing of like, did I put my eyes more on that kind of like reward than actually like creating good art? You know, just like, I don't know. It's just been I've been very introspective, you know, since moving to Nashville, when a lot of people move here and they just like even get, they're like, yeah, just like put that fire underneath me and to really go for it. And it's almost made me like moving to Nashville be like, okay, what is success to me in music? Like what is going to ultimately make me happy? Because, you know, I don't know if it's what I thought it was. And maybe if it is, I've been going about it in a way that's kind of exhausted me. But it's just been interesting, like this, I've been doing a lot of kind of like inner work on kind of defining what I guess success is for me. And I think every creative kind of needs to do that, or else it turns into a lot of burnout, or I don't know, just kind of straying from what maybe that truly, you know, made them sing or write a song in the first place or create a piece of art.
And I think there's one through line through this whole conversation. It's just been, there's not a right or wrong way to do any of this.
No, because I'm not
so
saying that.
It
it's exactly
fun,
what you
yeah.
said. Like, all of them are noble. Like winning a Grammy is just as important as, like, man, like, you were the
awards
mom
awards for
you know.
Art always feels weird to me, just personally. And that
the
always,
what?
I said awards for art awards. Always
yeah.
feels
I agree, yeah.
Unless it's
same
like,
with, like, competitions.
Yeah,
it's like,
I don't know. Well, yeah. like I said, this has been a ball. I had so much fun doing this.
Did we just, like, solve every world problem?
I think we did. I think we just nailed it.
I think we really got to the bottom of it.
Yeah, I know.
Guys, good job. This is great. We got to start doing this for more world problems. This is good.
Yeah.
But no,
this was
so much fun. And I'm so glad that we had you on, because
Thank you.
Performances were fantastic. I'm really excited to hear and see those. I'm excited to hear the new single. And
thanks for having me.
This was great. Of course.
And thanks for doing this for all artists. I really appreciate it. Like, we all love being here, so thank you.
That was fun. Thank you.
Cool.
That was a ball. That was so much fun.
Cheers.
That was a really good time. Nice going.
Thank you.
Oh, nice. That was a tough one for Brian. You don't leave her hanging, dude.
Sorry. My bad. That was really